MacCast Tuesday, April 30th, 2019. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. It's been another week, a lot of stuff happening in the Apple and Mac world. I took a little time over the weekend and went to Vegas to hang out with a bunch of nerds for the Frog Pants TMS meetup. If you don't know what that is, a great podcast network run by my friend Scott Johnson, and he's got a crew of people over there, including Tom Merritt and Brian Ibbett, and saw those guys out in Vegas, got to see the new Avengers movie. Have you seen it yet? Probably you have. Many of you have. Many of you haven't. We won't say anything more about it. No spoilers here. We keep it spoiler-free. But I've had a good time and glad to be back here talking with you about all things Apple and Macintosh. And we certainly have a lot to talk about because Apple had a quarterly results call just today, this morning, I think. And also, we're going to talk a little bit about upcoming products, maybe new AirPods and maybe new iPhones. Talk a little bit about the iPhone XR. I made a little prediction a while back, you may or may not remember, and it looks like it is coming true. Going to talk about 5G. Apple's got a recall of a product that you should probably know about, many of you should know about. Some changes with their design team. And Apple Watches going for swims in one way or another. We're going to talk about the good, bad, and ugly. And that's going to lead us into some of your feedback and your comments. We're going to talk a little bit about trying to help a couple folks out with some Bluetooth connectivity issues. I'm going to talk about Siri and how she can help you manage and listen to your music. And we'll round things out with that some more of that Apple Watch stuff and try and help a listener out who is maybe not getting the best satisfaction from Apple support. And I know we've talked about that in the past, but it's been a while, so it'll be a good review to go over what happens when you don't quite get the answer from Apple support that you're looking for. And that will finish up this episode. But before we get into things, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that sponsor is Malwarebytes. Now, malware, yep, it's a thing, even on our Macs. Adware, spyware, viruses, we all try to stay diligent, we stay on top of it. Apple has our backs in a lot of ways, but sometimes it's just not always enough. And even if you and I, us nerds, tech geeks, can keep ourselves safe, it's very likely that we may have a friend or a family member who's not quite as tech savvy, and they get hit. They get hit by some malware, some adware, and it's annoying. It's hard to clean up. It's a problem. As much as we try to help them protect themselves, things happen, and that's why Malwarebytes is a great bit of software to have in your toolkit. You've likely heard me talk about Malwarebytes on the show in the past, and I love it. I think it's a great application. I think it's one of the best and easiest tools to use on the Mac to quickly scan and remove and prevent malware. One particular piece I really like about it is you can use it however best fits your situation. Myself, I tend to use it to scan every once in a while when I think I'm having a problem or I may have run across something and just wasn't aware of it. But other folks, they're going to find it, doing it more proactively, having it actually scan your stuff and keep it safe, especially, again, those folks in your life who maybe run across this stuff a little bit more. Maybe they're not quite as safe in their browsing habits. And Malwarebytes is proven technology that absolutely crushes the growing threat of Mac malware. They can do a scan on average on a Mac in under 30 seconds, and it will remove adware, unwanted programs, all those things that can slow down your Mac. Ever have someone come to you and say, hey, my Mac's beach balling all the time? Good odds they might have some malware on there, and Malwarebytes is a perfect tool to take care of that. Finally, cybersecurity smart enough for the Mac. Visit malwarebytes.com/Mac for your free download and a 14-day trial of their premium offering. That's malwarebytes.com/Mac, and a big thank you to them for their support of the podcast. And before we dive into the news, I just realized to also mention that when I was hanging out in Vegas, I got to hang out with the OG podcast fan, Barry Falk, and his lovely wife, Bobby, and also a few other friends, including Tanner Goodman, who you've heard on this podcast before, also a MacCast listener. So got to hang out with some listeners, too. Barry actually has the MacCast supporter card, Patreon supporter card number 000. Yeah, he was my original MacCast supporter, and so he got that number. And it also serves as a little homage to Steve Jobs, who took employee number 0 after Wozniak took employee number 1. So, hey, Barry, great hanging out with you and seeing you out there in Vegas. All right, let's jump right into the Apple news, starting with Apple's second quarter financial results. Came out pretty good, another pretty decent quarter for Apple. Highs and lows, as often does happen. They had revenue of $58 billion. That was actually down about 5% from the same quarter a year ago. And they also earned $11.56 billion in profit. iPad revenue was actually up 22%. Services revenue was up 16%. But Mac revenue was down about 5%. And iPhone revenue down 17%. Actually, iPhone and services now make up about 75% total of Apple's revenue. That's iPhone coming in at 54% and services at 20%. Service is definitely the second largest portion of Apple's business at this point by revenue. Third largest portion is the Mac at 10%. And then wearables, home, and accessories. So your Apple Watch, your HomePod, your Beats headphones, all those sorts of things coming in at 9% of total revenue. And then the iPad is actually the smallest portion of Apple's revenue, coming in at 8%. So as we've discussed many times here on the MacCast, you know, iPhone sales are starting to trail off, and Apple's looking for that next big thing. In terms of hardware, we know they're working on several things, the car as a service, also augmented reality, virtual reality things. But until we have the replacement for the iPhone, they need that thing that's going to get them through the next couple of years. And they really are turning and looking at services as, I think, that bridging piece. And they are proving that they can do services pretty well. It is the largest area of growth in their business. They had their highest record for service revenue so far this quarter, and it grew 16%. Wearables, home, and accessories also grew 30%, so expect that to grow as well. And overall, looking at the numbers, I would say it was a pretty decent quarter. Wall Street actually responded pretty well, and Apple's stock price went up a little bit, which is even unusual when we have a results call. A lot of times they don't take well to the news, and this wasn't super positive news. You know, overall, it was good news. But, you know, Apple has had bigger months, or bigger quarters, rather, much bigger quarters, especially in the heyday of iPhone. So it was good to see this time around Apple staying pretty positive. I think they're pretty excited about the products and items that they have in the pipeline. They do their Q&A, talked over a number of things. And I thought one of the biggest takeaways was that, you know, these new services that they're talking about, Apple News Plus and Apple TV Plus, Apple Arcade, all of that sort of stuff, Tim Cook specifically called it out and said, these are not a hobby. And I think no one really thought that they were going to be a hobby, especially after their last special event. But good to hear him reiterate that, you know, this is serious business and Apple's going to take it seriously moving forward. Because certainly iPhone definitely slowing down. As a matter of fact, the latest numbers from IDC show that iPhone unit sales had a 30% drop year over year, which is very significant, right? folks are just not upgrading iPhones as frequently, and we are seeing the results of that. Also, just in general, smartphone sales are down. So this isn't just a problem for Apple. It actually is a problem for all smartphone manufacturers. Some people are citing the fact that Apple doesn't have 5G or doesn't have an exciting foldable phone as a reason why sales are down, but I really don't think that's factoring in. I don't buy into that argument, especially given the fact that that foldable technology, yeah, that didn't work out so well so far. I think they're going to get on top of it. I don't mean to be negative on that technology. I think it was maybe rushed out a little bit, and they'll get it sorted out. It was early days, right? And you know, I always applaud a company for taking a risk and pushing something out. You know, Apple has had their fair share of those things, maybe delivering something a little bit too early. Apple doesn't do it that frequently, but every once in a while, right, you're going to hit one of those. So not a big deal, but until we do have that next big thing, look to Apple doing a lot with their services business moving forward, and that slowly kind of grabbing a larger and larger slice of Apple's pie. So iPhone will kind of get a little bit smaller, services will get a little bit bigger, and hopefully they can keep all the rest of it fairly steady. I think whenever the Mac Pro hits, I think there's going to be a nice little bump up for Mac revenue as well, whatever quarter that comes out in, and we should have that sometime this year. I would hope that it happens before this summer. I think a perfect time to show off something like that would be at Worldwide Developer Conference coming up here in June. You know, a new Mac Pro with that new Mac display we've been hearing about. I think there's a lot of developers, pro customers who would love to have that to work with over the summer. And I'm sure many of you would as well. So that's kind of what happened with Apple's quarterly results. Again, not a huge quarter, but a solid quarter for Apple. I don't remember, was it one episode or two episodes ago when I gave you my first impressions of my new AirPods 2? They haven't even been broken in yet, and apparently Apple is already planning to make them obsolete, at least according to a couple of sources, one that I actually trust pretty well. Kicking things off, DigiTimes says suppliers are getting ready, they're gearing up to work with Apple to possibly deliver the next generation of AirPods, AirPods 3, by the end of the year, before the end of 2019. The big new feature, actually the one that was rumored to be a possibility for AirPods 2 and one that didn't maybe make the cut, noise cancellation. Now, I'm taking all of this with a grain of salt because as 9to5 Mac has pointed out, DigiTimes, they have a variable record of success when predicting Apple rumors. You may remember they had predicted that Apple's AirPower was, quote, just weeks away from shipping, and that was just a few weeks before Apple actually canceled the whole project. So there's that. But there's also counter rumors that AirPod 3s have been pushed back to 2020, that they're not even going to show up in 2019. So we have that going around as well. And so I was feeling pretty positive about that. All right, I'm okay. I got my AirPods 2. Not going to have to worry about new ones coming out this year. And then analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, who has a pretty good track record, claims that actually Apple's going to have two new AirPods models out by the end of 2019 or maybe early 2020. He claims that one set will actually be an all-new form factor at a higher price. He doesn't go on to give any details about that, of course. And that internally, the new AirPods, the new Buds, will move to a system in a package design to help improve yield rates and save space. Hopefully, I think, freeing up some space for a little bit bigger battery, because if you want to have new features like noise cancellation, health monitoring, all those things, it's gonna require a little bit more battery, and the system in a package design would also help lower some of the production costs, bring up a better profit margin for Apple, something they always like to have. And personally, I would love to have a set of AirPods with noise cancellation, especially if it was something that could be controlled with software. It could be actively adjusted, you know, sort of the level of noise cancellation, turning it on or off. That would be really neat. And I know that's something that can be done And I think if Apple would put noise cancellation into a set of AirPods, they probably would add that kind of functionality. Other rumors for AirPods that we've heard, you know, potential new AirPods that we've heard are a black color option. So maybe some additional colors, which would be nice, although the white is becoming pretty iconic, and I think Apple actually likes that. We're seeing a resurgence of, you know, people wearing the classic white earbuds, and it sort of just denoting that you have Apple products. So I think Apple likes that branding a little bit, but a black color option, that would be nice as well. Health features like heart rate monitoring, better water resistance, and there was that rumor for a while that they might even go to kind of a glass satiny finish that would help hold the AirPods in your ears a little bit better, although I've personally never had a problem with that. They fit my ears quite well, and most people I know whose ears they fit into, it works well. It seems to be kind of an all or nothing thing. I've had a few people tell me, hey, I can't wear AirPods at all, doesn't matter, they just don't fit my ears. And that's, you know, Apple made a big deal about that design, saying that they had tested it with, you know, like thousands of ears, but obviously not enough, because it certainly doesn't fit everybody's ears. But I still love my AirPods. I think they're a great product. I don't know if I'm saying this now, and I'm laughing just thinking about it, because of course, if Apple comes out with AirPod 3s before the end of the year, yep, I'll probably get a new set, because I can't help myself. I'm addicted. I think some of you are as well, right? We're addicted to this Apple products. That's why I do an Apple podcast, just so I can justify having to buy all this stuff. Really, I just want it for myself. Don't tell anybody. All right, but new AirPods on the horizon. Hopefully, they don't come out this year, because again, I'd like to keep that money in my bank account. Surprise! People like the iPhone XR. Okay, if you listen to this podcast, maybe you're not surprised, because you probably remember that I mentioned my prediction was that the iPhone XR was going to become Apple's most popular iPhone, and not for early adopters. You know, I got a lot of flack for this, because a lot of people were saying, oh, nope, the iPhone XS Max, that's outselling it. It's going to do a lot better. And I always maintained that over the long haul, the iPhone XR was going to be Apple's most popular model, and it looks like that's exactly what's happening. This is according to data from Consumer Intelligence Research Partners. The iPhone XR continues to lead iPhone sales in the U.S. for the second quarter in a row. They showed that the iPhone XR captured about 40% of all iPhone sales in the U.S., while the iPhone XS and XS Max combined represented another 25%. And Kantar also released data for the U.K. that showed the iPhone XR was the best-selling model over there as well. The Consumer Intelligence Research Partners report also noted that consumers are choosing to pay for additional phone storage with their new devices, and that new devices are also driving services growth, specifically in the area of Apple Music. They said that 48% of people buying new iPhones are purchasing additional iCloud storage, and that 21% are subscribing to Apple Music. So that is obviously why we're hearing numbers in the quarterly results like 16% growth in services revenue, right? More and more of us are buying iPhone storage. Now, some might argue that we're being forced into it, but, you know, I actually really like my iCloud storage, and I like using it more and more. And yeah, Apple's pricing is a little bit on a premium, but I still think it's ultimately worth it. You know, I have the family plan for iCloud storage. We share 2 terabytes of data, and it is plenty for everyone in the family. And at, you know, what, 20 or 10 bucks a month, 120 bucks a year, I find it to be very worth it, especially considering the fact that I can keep my entire iPhoto library in the cloud and synced between all my devices. One of my favorite features, actually, of iCloud storage. And don't even get me started on Apple Music. I think it's brilliant. I love all the recommendations. I had tried Spotify at one point, and not to knock Spotify, but it just wasn't the service for me. And Apple Music has been the service for me. So absolutely love it. Not surprised that people buying iPhones, especially iPhone XR, are opting to get some of those services. And speaking of iPhones, you know, rumors around the next iPhone, the next series of iPhones. Are we going to go to 11? Is it going to be the iPhone 11? I hope so. I think there's some great Spinal Tap jokes to be had in there, right? But we're starting to see mock-ups and renders of potential new versions of the iPhone on leaks, actually mocked up some 3D renders based on information they say came from CAD files of the possible final production designs. I think it might be a little bit early for that, but we'll let them have their day with their images. Maybe you saw these online. One of the most interesting things about it is that camera bump, the Ritz Cracker square camera bump that's going to house the triple lens camera system. Yep, they're saying it's going to be integrated right into the glass, that it's actually going to be formed into the glass. So a solid piece of glass that just has the bump in it. So no metal bezel, not like a separate piece, which is interesting. It also looks like it would sort of minimize the bump a little bit. It'll be a little bit flush, but I'm thinking that's also going to be an expensive piece of glass to get fixed. If it's all integrated like that, cool from a design perspective and something very much, you know, like something that Apple would do. And so it won't surprise me if that's what happens. They did note that the 5.8-inch model is going to be slightly bigger, about a millimeter height and width, and just a hair thicker, a couple tenths of a millimeter on the thickness, hopefully meaning that they're going to put a little bit more battery in there. And they did say it's going to have a smaller notch and even reduced bezels, although the report says those things will be almost indistinguishable from the current iPhone XS and XS Max. There's a slightly repositioned microphone on the back, and supposedly the mute switch design is going to change from the version we have now, which kind of goes from the front to the back of the phone, kind of left to right, I guess, if you're looking at the side of the phone, moving it to an up and down kind of button, more in the style of like what we had on the old iPad. Although I think in the render, I don't think it was round like it was on the old iPads. So not a big deal, but that's kind of a cool little change. And then we're also hearing a rumor, and this was a rumor I think that we had heard in the past and didn't come to fruition, but maybe it's resurfacing now, that in the box, Apple will include an 18-watt USB-C power adapter along with a USB-C to Lightning cable, because the iPhone 11 is expected to retain the Lightning connector. So that's not going away, not being replaced by USB-C, at least not this time around either. I figured Apple would be moving to that, and I'd actually like them to do that, because that way we get a more consistent connector across our Macs, our iPads, and our iPhones. But sounding like, at least at this point, most people who are reporting rumors are thinking that we're going to stick with Lightning at least for another generation. And good news for all of those iPhone XS fans out there as well, it is expected to get a camera upgrade to the dual lens camera system when the other devices move to a triple lens system. And I think that makes sense. I think we also talked about that maybe on a prior episode of the MacCast. But that's kind of the latest in iPhone rumors. We need to talk a little bit about Apple and 5G. It's coming up more and more, especially with Intel kind of exiting the modem business and Apple doing their deal with Qualcomm. It means that we're likely to see an iPhone with 5G probably in 2020. There had been reports that Apple was even considering buying Intel's modem business at one point to kind of prop up their modem efforts, internal modem efforts that we know they've been working on. But turns out they opted not to do that. Now we have reports that one of their lead 5G modem engineers, Ruben Caballero, has actually left the company. And who knows what that means for Apple. Maybe they're just going all in with Qualcomm and they're going to kind of cut back on their internal modem development efforts. I have a feeling not, though, because I don't think they like paying the kinds of licensing fees and just being under the thumb of any one of their suppliers. And they're sort of locked in with Qualcomm, as we talked about in the last episode of the MacCast. This deal that they did actually turns out revenue-wise or cost-wise to even be a worse deal than what they had before. But I think they got between a rock and a hard place, and they just had to concede that that was the only way they were going to get a 5G modem in an iPhone in any reasonable time frame. If they had to wait till 2021, that would actually hurt the company. I think they can get away with not doing it in 2019, but they absolutely need to have a phone with a 5G modem in 2020. Now, Ruben Caballero, just for a little background on him, he's been a guy that's been around with Apple in their cellular modem division since AntennaGate. Remember that? When Apple had issues with the antennas and Steve Jobs said we were holding it wrong. He was also a guy who is named on nearly all of Apple's 3G and LT and other wireless networking patents. So pretty big loss there to the team. No word on, you know, if he's going to be replaced or anything like that. I'm sure they have plenty of talented people internally, though, that could probably step up and fill some of those roles. And I do, again, think they're going to continue to work on modem development inside Apple. But supposedly that team has been in flux, according to reports, since that Qualcomm deal, you know, went into place. For those of you who might be worried that, you know, Samsung is going to get a leg up on Apple when it comes to 5G phones, having them out this year, you know, I don't think that's something that I really worry about. Apple has never been an early adopter of cellular modem technology, and it's especially not important this time around because you're not going to have wide deployment of 5G. You're going to hear a lot of marketing around 5G. You're going to have a lot of cell phone companies trying to convince you that it is the next big thing, that it is super fast and it's going to change your life. But the more and more I read about it, the more I'm discovering that, yeah, it's going to be great. It is a good advancement. But just like we had with 4G and LTE and all those things, it has its caveats as well. And you may even have to pay for it if you want to get the fastest speeds, because AT&T's CEO came out and said, hey, 5G is going to have a speed range. Maybe it's time for us to kind of do like they do with cable services and home internet and start charging people more for higher speeds. As far as how those speeds are, 5G speeds are in the range of 500 gigabits per second, possibly even going up to 500 megabits per second, excuse me, possibly even going up as high as 1 to 2 gigabits per second. But keep in mind those top end speeds, those are lab based. Those are not really real world environments. And it seems like in the real world, those cellular modem speeds tend to be a lot lower. Anybody who has 4G knows that to be the case, right? You can get really great speeds in one location, you move to another location, even though you still have 4G LTE, you know, things can go a lot slower. And with 5G, those higher end speeds, those top speeds, apparently require a technology called MM wave technology, which actually doesn't travel very far from cell towers. So you're probably going to have to be in an area where there is cell towers pretty close together, like urban areas. And even there, you're going to need to be outside and within line of sight of the tower because MM wave technology does not penetrate materials at all. So you're going to have to be outside in open urban areas. Yeah, that's a thing that's really common, right? Still, again, it's going to be an improvement over 4G LTE. So I don't mean to knock it, but I'm just saying, like, it's not going to be this huge overnight revolution. And this is the kind of thing Apple knows about, right? It's going to take a while for all that deployment to happen, for the switchovers to happen. And so, you know, having a phone that has the technology early doesn't necessarily give you an advantage, you know, in the majority of situations. So I think 2020 is going to be fine for a 5G iPhone, and that's when we probably will see one. Ming-Chi Kuo says Apple will have a 5G iPad Pro in 2021. I don't know why the iPad would be so much further behind the iPhone, you know, a whole entire year, but hey, that's what Ming-Chi Kuo thinks is going to happen. To prepare, though, he is saying that this year they may have an iPad that's going to move to an LCP softboard liquid crystal polymer design. This is a flexible way of connecting components together in a device, and it's expected to be used to connect the antenna to the motherboard in the iPad and allow them to eventually move to have a 5G modem inside the iPad. As far as what the iPad Pro in 2021 will look like, he says that outwardly there were not expected to be any real big design changes, and the sizes should remain the same at 11 inch and 12.9 inches. So probably just this will be a year for a nice little spec rev internally of the iPad Pro and the move to this new LCP softboard design. And of course, iFixit will let us know if that's actually what Apple ends up doing when they do their teardown. So a little information on Apple 5G and what we can expect it maybe in next generation iPads. Now I have a little recall to tell you about. This is not a real serious one. It's one that Apple voluntarily recalled, but it does affect a number of you if you're in Hong Kong, Singapore, or the United Kingdom, and you purchased an Apple product, especially a laptop, between 2003 and 2010. Also, if you, in that same time frame, purchased one of Apple's World Travel Adapter Kits, the little three-prong AC wall plug adapter that plugs into that, Apple is recalling that. They're stating that in some very rare cases, the affected three-prong wall plug adapter can break, and that can cause a risk of electrical shock if it is touched. They know of six incidents worldwide where people have had issues, and so they're issuing this recall, asking owners, if you have one of those little adapters, to stop using it until Apple can actually replace it, and they will do that free of charge. The affected three-prong wall plug adapters are white. They have no lettering on the inside slot where it attaches to the power adapter. The new ones are white with gray on the inside portion that connects to the power adapter. So that's kind of how you can tell the difference between the two. These are only the laptop style adapters. So the things that kind of slide in, this is that piece that slides into the power brick and converts it, you know, from having the cable to being able to just plug it right into the wall. If you have one of the affected ones, Apple has set up a recall page. I will link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. That's on their website, and it has all the details on how to get that replaced. So if you have one of those, get it replaced by Apple. Stay safe out there. Although I have to imagine that devices from 2003 to 2010, a lot of them probably just aren't in use anymore. But hey, you never know. If you have one, Apple will replace it, so why not take advantage of that? Turns out Apple saw some significant losses to their design team this week, the team that runs under Johnny Ive. At least four members of Ive's design team are leaving or are in the process of leaving. These are designers that have been on the team for decades, so it is a little bit shocking to hear this, and you're wondering why it's all happening at the same time. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people reporting on this who are going to read a lot into it. I don't think ultimately it's that big a deal. I don't think it's something that we have to worry about. Only one of the designers is really talking. I think this came out in a piece in the New York Times, if I'm remembering correctly. But at least one of them said the reasons for his departure was he just wanted to take more time to spend with his family. And if you've been at a company for a long time and probably very successfully and have the ability to maybe retire early, I don't know anybody who wouldn't take advantage of that. So I think that's one of the things that's going on here. Departures in the design team are pretty rare, which is another reason why four all at once kind of is more of a big deal. But we have been seeing people leave since 2016. There was some folks who left in 2016, 2017. The team's pretty small, so like anyone leaving is a pretty big deal. Ive himself had stepped back, if you remember, from day-to-day involvement back in 2015 while they were working on the Apple Park transition. He had kind of moved over to work on some of the Apple Park stuff, so he stepped away from the day-to-day kind of design stuff at Apple proper, and he returned to that role in 2017. So he's been there. One designer, Rico Zorfendorfer, he spoke on the record about his departure and said that the staff turnover right now is simply a sign that it's time for a new generation of designers to step up at Apple and take over. And he said they have incredible new designers there who are ready and up for the challenge, basically. And nothing wrong with getting new blood in there. And I think this is simply a natural turnover that's going on. Again, we're going to hear people saying it's a sign of doom and gloom, that Apple design is going downhill, and this is a sign that something's wrong internally at Apple, and especially with the design team. I can almost see those articles writing themselves right now, but it's really, I don't think, the case, right? I think Apple is right now as strong as it's ever been, honestly. And I think that they have a lot of stuff in the pipeline, a lot of stuff that they're working on that we don't really know about. And I think give it a year or two and we are going to be again blown away. And probably the product I'm looking most forward to immediately, like I alluded to a little bit earlier, is that new Mac Pro. I'm really thinking that Apple is going to hit this one out of the park. They've obviously been working on it for a long time. I will tell you that if they don't knock it out of the park, it's going to be pretty bad. I think the reports are going to be pretty bad, and then we will start getting a lot more of the Apple is doomed stories going on, and a lot of people will start to question, can they design hardware anymore? Can they create compelling products that the public love? But I think they will. I think they are going to do what Apple always does and completely blow us away. And I'm looking forward to seeing that. The New York Times kicked up the latest App Store controversy this week. They wrote up a piece about some parental control and screen time monitoring apps being pulled from the App Store. The story was basically alleging that the motivation, or at least one of the motivations for Apple denying or removing those apps from the App Store, was because they didn't like competition for their own recently launched screen time application. Of course, that turned out to be far from the truth, and you would expect a publication like the New York Times to maybe do a little bit better research. But basically, Apple responded publicly, which they often don't do to these things. First, it was Phil Schiller responding to an email from a customer, and then Apple issuing an official statement about why they actually pulled these apps. The apps were actually pulled because many of them were taking advantage of and using multi-device management profiles and technologies related to that, stuff that was designed really for IT departments and not consumers. The problem with multi-device management profiles is, like other profiles that you put on your phone, they actually modify kind of the way the device works, and a lot of the security measures and privacy measures that Apple puts in place can actually be bypassed. And that was what was enabling some of these third-party apps to work. The problem there is that method gives the developer basically unfettered access to your devices, right? They can get in and they can monitor things. They can turn on cameras. They can disable parts of the phone. They can search through contacts and emails. Not that this is what these companies or services were doing. And I think that's their counter argument, is like, we should be able to use this technology as long as the customer is aware of it, to, you know, provide a service. If the customer is willing to pay us for a service, you know, why can't consumers have a similar service like IT departments? The difference here is that the devices are owned by you. And with the case of multi-device management, it's typically a company, right? These are company-issued devices. They need to be able to monitor them, control what software is installed on them, be able to remotely disable them, be able to track them, and those sorts of things. And it's a known entity. When you're issued a device from your company, they're going to tell you, hey, we're monitoring you, we're controlling this device, all that sort of thing. When you're signing up for a service where you're saying, I simply want to have parental controls and I want to be in control of that device, that's great. But the problem is that the company providing that service using the multi-device management profile is basically what it's connecting to that's allowing you to do all the parental control stuff. It also allows them to do similar sorts of things. So Apple had some concerns about the security and privacy, especially considering the fact that many of these devices are owned and used by children, right? That's why you're getting into that software. So they could access your data, they could track your kids, all those sorts of things. And Apple, as a security and privacy-oriented company, didn't want that going on. And as a matter of fact, in 2017, they changed the App Store guidelines to specifically restrict developers from doing this. And they had also contacted the developers who were violating this policy, gave them 30 days to change how their apps worked before they actually just started pulling them. And so a lot of them didn't change how they were working. And frankly, they couldn't. And again, that is the counter argument. It is valid counter argument that they don't have any other way to enable that kind of parental control and to be able to compete with some of the built-in stuff that's on the iPhone, built-in screen time monitoring, and all those sorts of things. They have to use this other route because there aren't internal open APIs. The fully sandboxed version of iOS doesn't allow a lot of the monitoring and control features that people would want in this kind of application. So this was kind of the workaround. It was the only thing available to developers, and they're kind of feeling like, you know, Apple shutting this down is restricting them from being able to compete with what Apple is building out of the box and has access to. And this is a common complaint that's leveraged against Apple. And I think it is valid. But what Apple will often do, and I think they are going to do in this case, is they've developed screen time. They've developed internally some of the systems for providing the ability to add parental controls and other sorts of things into the core operating system. They built their own app to take advantage of that. And then I think either at this Worldwide Developer Conference or maybe the next one, they will open up APIs to third-party developers to be able to jump in and build third-party apps around those technologies, around those hooks and stuff like that. And that's typically what they've done. It's what we've seen them do with Siri and, you know, now Siri shortcuts and all that sort of stuff. And I think they'll do similar things for screen time monitoring and parental controls. Will it happen at this year's Worldwide Developer Conference? I don't think so, but it would be nice if it did, because then some of these developers could maybe get their apps back in the Mac App Store. But that was kind of a big hubbub this week, and I think it was mountains out of molehills kind of stuff, so I wanted to just talk about that here on the MacCast and kind of straighten things out. And then finally, in the news for this week, kind of a fun story. I wanted to close out with something a little bit fun this week. Apple Watch survived 6 months in the Pacific Ocean, or at least washed up on a beach buried in the sand. A surfer in Huntington Beach, California, had actually lost his Apple Watch about 6 months ago while he was surfing, you know, kind of hit a strong wave. It got pulled off his wrist, spent about an hour searching for it, wasn't able to find it, tried using Find My iPhone, no luck, and considered it a loss, even bought a brand new Apple Watch and kind of moved on. But then 6 months later, he received a phone call that the Apple Watch that he had lost had been found. A man who was kind of beachcombing about 2 miles north of where the surfer had been had found the watch, had found contact information on it, and contacted him, said, hey, I have your watch. Turned out the watch was actually working perfectly. The display was a bit hazy. The report said that the owner thought it was maybe from salt water getting into the device, but I'm guessing it also probably tumbling around in the waves in the sand also got a pretty good sandblasting to the display. So Great to hear that he got it back, and amazing that it was still functioning after 6 months on the beach and in the ocean, and who knows what it kind of went through. As far as how he got it back, they just said that they had contact information. I'm assuming it was contact information from the Apple Watch itself, that maybe the surfer put it into lost mode through Find My iPhone, which allows you to lock the device and then put a message on it with information on how to contact you if someone should find it. So that's a handy feature that maybe not everyone knows about. So a great reason to use Find My iPhone and turn that on your devices. You never know. You might get your device back even months later. So I thought that was a fun little story. And with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a couple other show sponsors, starting with SimpliSafe. You know, there's lots of words for fear: alarm, the willies, the heebie-jeebies, a lot of fun words apparently, panic also. One thing that causes me fear, and another great phrase, I think, is things that go bump in the night. We've all been there. You're woken up by a noise. It gets your heart racing, your heart pounding. I know it happens to me. I grab usually what's ever handy to try to protect myself. Probably something not very appropriate. I guess I could bash somebody over the head with my iPad if I really had to. But you kind of grab whatever you have. You shakily go out to investigate, and it turns out, you know, the cat knocked something over, or there's a tree branch, you know, being blown by the wind, brushing up against the side of the house. Well, unlike simply, you know, bashing somebody over the head with your iPad, SimpliSafe is actually something that can help protect you from those bumpy night things and help put your fears at ease. SimpliSafe is home security that knows it feels good to fear less. This is award-winning 24/7 protection that protects your home through it all, blizzards, blackouts, and burglars. SimpliSafe has won awards from all kinds of tech experts that count. The Verge calls it the best home security. It's won Reader's Choice from PC Magazine. It's a two-time winner of CNET's Editor's Choice and a Wirecutter top pick. SimpliSafe has no contract, no hidden fees, and no gotchas, and they always keep prices fair and honest. Thanks to SimpliSafe, fear has no place in a place like home. Try SimpliSafe with free shipping and free returns, and right now you'll get a 60-day free trial too. Order now and have your home protected within a week. Just go to simplisafe.com/maccast to get started today. That's simplisafe.com/maccast, SimpliSafe.com/maccast, and be sure to go there so they know that we sent you. SimpliSafe.com/maccast, and a big thank you to SimpliSafe for their support of the show. I'd also like to thank Capterra for supporting the show. You know, one of the best things about the internet is the ability to get reviews and opinions on stuff, the things we eat, what we buy, the places we stay on vacation, and we use them all the time because we know that the best way to make sure something is great, that we're making the right choices, is by getting reviews from real people. So why would you not do that when making choices about the software that you're going to buy and use in your business? Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solutions for your business. You can easily search more than 700 specific categories of software, from email marketing to project management. And just as an example of the great kind of software that you can find on Capterra, they have Sanebox. This is a great service. I absolutely love it. It's a service I've been using for years to automatically triage and pre-filter my inbox. And all I had to do was search for, you know, email services, and up popped Sanebox. And it has a 4.5 star rating on Capterra with great comments and great reviews because it's awesome software. And those comments are coming from real people. And it's really those comments and ratings that I think are the real value. They have over 750,000 of them from real software users, people who use the software. So you can discover everything you need to make an informed decision. No matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution and to do it quickly. Join the millions of people who use Capterra each month to find the right tools for their business. Visit capterra.com/maccast. That's CAPTERRA.com/maccast today to find the tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Capterra, software selection simplified. And a big thank you to them for their support of the show. Wireless connectivity. Let's talk about wireless connectivity. It is both an amazing thing and I think an infuriating thing. And as we get more and more devices that are connecting wirelessly, I think we all know what happens, right? You start to get weird strangeness, interference, things that aren't working quite right, all kinds of problems. And this week, I have a couple of emails, a couple of comments from listeners who have run into a little bit of trouble, different kinds of trouble with their wireless devices. So let's kick things off with Dan. He's having some trouble with AirPods and has his own little theories about that. And I'll let him tell you a little bit more about what's going on.
Hey, Adam, this is Dan up in Oregon. And I have an odd thing that's been happening with my AirPods, and it's got me wondering if there are other people in the community that have been experiencing the same thing. So, as you know, the new AirPods have come out, and I actually had been starting to have some connectivity issues with my older pair. I've been using them for a long time, and I love my AirPods like you. And so I thought, well, maybe it's just time for me to get a new pair. So I went ahead and ordered the new AirPods. And then my daughter came home from college this weekend, and I went in and she was studying, and she was using a different set of headphones. And I asked her, hey, how have your AirPods been doing for you? She goes, well, they've been kind of problematic lately. They disconnect, and she described similar things that I've been experiencing. So I was like, bummer. Well, my new AirPods arrived yesterday, and my wife was there when I was opening the box. She goes, what have you got? I said, I got the new AirPods. They arrived. And she grabs them, and she hugs them to her chest. She's like, yes, I want a pair too, because she loves her AirPods. And she said she's been experiencing connectivity issues lately. And so all three of us have been experiencing this thing, whereas previously our AirPods have worked great. And so it just kind of makes me wonder, like, Apple's touting one of the big features of the new AirPods is connectivity, improved connectivity. So have they maybe like changed stuff the way, I don't know, have they changed something that's causing the older ones to not work as well? And I'm not usually a big conspiracy theory person, but it seems a little odd that the old ones aren't working as well as the new ones come out. So I wondered if other people have been experiencing this. So thanks for any input you can give. Thanks for the MacCast, and thanks for the MacCast community.
Hey, Dan, you're welcome. And to immediately address what you're thinking, no, I don't think anything is going on. I don't think Apple is deliberately trying to, you know, put things in the software to make old AirPods work less reliably so that you'll run out and buy a new set of AirPods. This often comes up as a theory. And I know you're kind of tongue-in-cheek joking with us. I don't think you honestly believe the conspiracy theory that that's what's going on. But I can understand that you want to know, are other people in the community having issues? Maybe it's related to a recent software update. I can personally tell you that I have not had any issues either with my old AirPods or my new AirPods. I haven't heard a lot from folks in the community that are having problems. People do definitely have issues from time to time. I can tell you, and I even commented on the MacCast here, that I did have the strange issue where every day on my walk in my neighborhood, when I would get to a certain area, the AirPods would just cut out. They would literally just drop out. And I don't know what it was about that area, if there's weird, you know, alien stuff going on there, or, you know, somebody's running a giant, you know, microwave array, or who knows what's going on, right? I do live in a military town, San Diego, right? We got a lot of military aircraft flying around doing weird stuff. So you never really know, right? But I'm not a conspiracy theorist person either. But it does make you wonder, right? When you kind of have these little weird issues. So I know where you're coming from. I can totally understand it. But I have to say, you've been using your AirPods for a long time. I have had instances where I've had issues And for me, very often what will resolve it is simply unpairing and repairing the AirPods. Now, I know you shouldn't have to do that, but it does help sometimes with the connectivity issues. So literally, I will go into the Bluetooth settings, find the AirPods, click on the little info icon or go to the screen where I can unpair them or tell it to forget the device, and then just simply repair them, go through the setup process, you know, put them back into the case, flip it open, it will recognize the AirPods, and then just reconnect. And I have to tell you, about 90% of the time, that resolves my issues. I did have one instance one time where I was using them one night, and no matter what I did, they kept dropping out. I couldn't get them to reconnect. And ultimately, I just, you know, gave up and went to bed and just chalked it up to, you know, maybe solar flares. Some kind of interference, something was going on. Again, maybe the aliens were outside my house, or maybe the military was running, you know, some sort of radio frequency experiments or something like that. I don't really know. But I would give that a try. You know, reset the connection, see if that helps. I'm curious, are they dropping the connection with all of your devices, or is it just individual devices? If it's just a particular iPhone, maybe consider reinstalling the software there, or doing the network connectivity reset on that device. Or maybe just put it into airplane mode and take it out of airplane mode. Another thing I'm thinking, because you have older AirPods, I have noticed that when the batteries get low, connectivity isn't as reliable, right? They can drop out if the battery is running low. So maybe just the batteries are getting worn out. A lot of folks having battery issues and worn out batteries with older AirPods at this point, you know, 2 years in, and that can maybe be some of the problems. So maybe consider getting a battery replacement from Apple and see if that doesn't do it. Obviously, another thing to do if you continue to have issues is just, you know, contact Apple, go into the Genius Bar and see if they can take care of you. It's not unheard of to have them just swap out or replace AirPods for folks. So that might be worth trying as well. So that's my thoughts on it. We'll throw it out to the rest of the community. What do you think? There are others of you out there having similar issues to Dan with your older AirPods, and you want to jump in on this conspiracy theory? Is Apple tweaking the software, making you, forcing you to upgrade? I think we've already learned from, you know, battery gate or whatever it was, that is really not the case. Apple has no interest in forcing you to upgrade your products. They want you to use and love your products for as long as possible. And I really do believe that. And as often happens, you know, these kinds of issues come in waves when we start hearing from the community. Mustang is also having an issue with Bluetooth devices, not specifically AirPods, and he could use some of our help as well. So here is what Mustang had to say.
Hello, Adam. This is Martin Auclair from Montreal in Canada. I'm a longtime listener of the MacCast, and I have an issue that I've been trying to solve for quite some time, but haven't found an answer yet, and I was hoping that maybe you or your listeners could maybe give me some clues or hints as to how to solve it. And it goes as follows. This is what I call the Bluetooth tug war. It is actually provoked by my Apple TV and other Bluetooth-enabled device. I'm using right now a headset from Sony that I like very much. And I'm trying to use this Bluetooth headset to connect to my Apple TV and other devices in my home. But here lies the rub. Because the Apple TV 4K, I should mention, is not or never really turned off. It is always in sleep mode when it's not active. As soon as I'm using this same Bluetooth headset from Sony to connect to, say, my iPad within the vicinity of the Apple TV, the Apple TV will snatch that headset from my iPad, and then I just can't connect to this Bluetooth headset from my iPad or even my laptop when also I'm around the Apple TV, which is a little frustrating because the only way I found so far to solve that problem is to either disconnect the device, the headset from my list of iPad or computer, and then trying to pair again from scratch, or just unplug physically the Apple TV from the power supply and then try to connect to my iPad or computer. So I'm not sure if you ever have heard of such issue. I didn't. I guess I'm a case one in this, but anyway, if anybody has an answer for that, I will really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Adam. I appreciate your work.
Hey, thank you for the question. And I apologize because I think at the beginning I mutilated your name. I thought it was Mustang. I was trying to listen in here. Martin, Maddie. I'm not really sure. Sorry. But thank you for your question and your comment. And I have to tell you that you are definitely not alone. Bluetooth devices are notoriously finicky when it comes to pairing and unpairing, especially with multiple devices. Using Bluetooth on multiple devices has always been a problem. That's actually specifically why Apple developed chips, their own chips, to deal with the problem. The H1 and W1 chips used in the AirPods specifically are designed to address this issue where going between devices with Bluetooth is a complete nightmare. So the fact that your Apple TV is sort of globbing onto your Sony headset and not letting go, that's pretty normal. Now, it wasn't clear to me, is it just grabbing it first and then you have to reselect it from your other device? It sounds like that's what's happening. And then your other device, you know, can't get a hold of it because the Apple TV is just holding on to it. It's not the case where you're already connected to your iPad, you walk by the Apple TV, and then suddenly it switches over to the Apple TV, because that would be even more annoying and less common. But I think what you're experiencing is the most common thing. You know, the Apple TV has your Bluetooth device and it is not going to let it go for anything. And my one suggestion would be maybe do the opposite of what you're doing. Rather than disconnecting from the actual device, you know, like resetting the iPad connection, just go to the Apple TV and tell the Apple TV to forget your Bluetooth headset. And you could even try to just remember to do that, you know, when you finish a session with the Apple TV, just make sure that you go and unpair it. Now, the inconvenient thing there is you're going to have to repair to the Apple TV each time, but I'm going to guess that you're using your headset with your Apple TV less frequently than you do with maybe your iPad or your Mac. I don't really know. But on your Apple TV, if you go into Settings, Remotes and Devices, and Bluetooth, you can actually select your headset and then just select Unpair Device. And then, you know, it'll obviously let go of the headset at that point, and then you should be able to reconnect it to your iPad or your Mac without issue. On the Mac, I will also mention something that you might want to try, which is an application. I actually think I picked it as a thing of the moment a couple episodes back. It's called Tooth Fairy, and it was actually recommended to me by a MacCast listener. And this is a cool little app. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at MacCast.com. It's a menu bar app. It sits in your menu bar. It looks like a little pair of headphones. And once you pair an Apple device or a Bluetooth device to your Mac, what you can do is just simply click on that menu bar item and will automatically reconnect to that device. They even have a keyboard shortcut you can set up for it. So you can just hit a keyboard shortcut and say, hey, I want to connect to my headset. It's great for AirPods. I would assume it's also great for Bluetooth headsets. Well, I know it works with Bluetooth headsets. I just haven't tried it with anything other than AirPods. But it actually connects really, really quickly, at least with the AirPods. And I would assume, because this listener had told me about it because of Bluetooth headsets, that it would do the same. So you might give that a shot as well. And I'm sure some other members of the MacCast community have probably experienced similar issues and might have additional recommendations. So if you do have one of those, shoot us an email or an audio comment to maccast@gmail.com. But there you go, a couple of Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, wireless connectivity issues, and hopefully we helped you out with those. Did you know that Siri, when she's not helping us out with our stuff, when she's not being a personal assistant, she can also be a DJ? The folks at iMore actually wrote up a great piece about DJ Siri, and it was a cool reminder to me of all the cool stuff that Siri can do with your music, especially if you're an Apple Music subscriber. And I thought it'd be kind of cool to just run down some of these things, talk about them a little bit. Playing music is something that maybe you've used Siri for. And this is great if you own a HomePod as well. You can do all this stuff with the HomePod. And I often do a lot of this stuff with my HomePod, and I'm often blown away with how well it all works. But you can, of course, ask Siri to play an album or a playlist. But did you know if you just say shuffled at the end of that request, so, you know, play this album shuffled, you can actually get it mixed up a little bit, or this playlist shuffled. It's a handy little extra word that can go on the end that gives you a shuffled playlist. You can ask for a band's latest album, or maybe an album from a specific year, or the first album from an artist or a band. So if you don't remember specifically the name of the album, you know, what was so-and-so's first album, you can just ask Siri to play it for you, and she will. You can even just ask her what the first album was, or the list of albums from an artist. You can ask to play a song by singing the lyrics. So you can say, play the song that goes like, and then just say some lyrics from that song, and she'll figure it out. And I've had to do that a few times, because we always don't remember the name of a song necessarily, but you can sometimes remember some of the words. And if you want to sing it, I'm sure Siri would love to hear you sing to her. So you can do it that way as well. I usually just speak the words, but it doesn't matter. You can sing, speak, whatever. I think you can even hum a tune, and sometimes she'll be able to get it that way. You can ask her to play music by a mood or genre. So you can say, hey, play some upbeat jazz music, or play some chill pop music, and you'll get a playlist related to that. You can also say, create a radio station based on an artist or a song, and you'll get a new kind of mix based on that kind of music. And one thing I thought that was a good reminder in this piece was, if you try a command or ask her to do something and it doesn't work out, just simply try again. You'll be surprised, you know, how many times I've tried something, especially with the HomePod, and it takes two or three tries. Yeah, it's a little bit frustrating, but she will eventually get there. Sometimes I have to change my enunciation or change my tactic, but you can get it to work. So don't get discouraged or frustrated. And remember that Siri will learn over time, so it will get better. So it does. I think it is worthwhile to make a few attempts before you completely give up. I will tell you, occasionally I've had to completely give up just based on, you know, an artist name or a song she's just not really understanding, especially when you have a word maybe in that song title that has alternate meanings, two or three different meanings. Yeah, she'll get a little bit confused on that stuff. And sometimes I'll give up and just go to my iPhone and have it, you know, manually play it right to the HomePod or something like that. But, you know, give multiple tries a shot. Another cool thing that DJ Siri can do is play music based on charts. So you can say, you know, play the number one song from a certain day or a certain year. Play the top 10 songs from the United States, or the top 10 songs in the UK right now. Play the most popular songs from a given year. So most popular songs of 1967. And you'll get a playlist related to that. You can also ask to play the hottest song from an artist. So, you know, what is an artist's current top listened to song? And she will happily serve that up for you. You can also add songs to your library or to a playlist. So you can say, add this song to my playlist called, and whatever playlist name that you currently have is, or add this to my library. One of my favorite things to do is to like or dislike songs. So I can say, hey, I like this song, or hey, I dislike this song, or hey, don't play this song ever again, or hey, play more songs like this one, because I really do like it. All of those things work to help kind of do your music curation. And what's great about that is that goes into the algorithm for additional music recommendations on Apple Music. So, you know, don't play any songs like this is a really handy one that I use quite frequently, because often, you know, I'll get suggestions that just don't really fit. But more often than not, because I think I do that, I get music that I really like. And of course, you can use Siri to control your music, you know, skip this track, go back one, pause the music. You can even say go back a certain amount of time. So if you need to jump back 30 seconds or a minute in a song, you can get it to do that. And those are always really handy. And then finally, kind of the last one that's really cool is just getting information on the music that you're currently listening to. So you can ask, you know, what the name of a currently playing song is, or who the artist who sings that song is, or what album is this song from? What year was this song released? Who wrote this song, who sang this song, who played a specific instrument on the song. So you can say, hey, who is the drummer on this song? And you can get that information very frequently. Not always, but it usually works out. You can ask how many songs are on a particular album, in case you're curious about that. And if you want to get more information about an artist, like the bio of an artist, you can say, hey, tell me about this artist. And you'll get quite a bit of information about an artist who is, you know, on a song that you're listening to. So all kinds of really cool, great music stuff. I'm sure I missed a couple cool things. If you know of something that you ask DJ Siri to do quite frequently for you, and it's something you enjoy, share that with us. Shoot me an email or an audio comment to maccast@gmail.com. I'm going to finish out this episode of the MacCast trying to help out another MacCast listener. Mitch wrote in, and he had a recent experience, unfortunately not a great one, with trying to get some support on his Apple Watch. I'll let him tell you a little bit about what's going on, and then we'll talk about it a little bit on the back end. I have some suggestions, and maybe you have some suggestions for Mitch as well. So here's what Mitch ran into.
Hi, Adam. This is Mitch. I had a feedback piece regarding my Apple Watch that I wanted to share with you. I own the Series 0 Apple Watch originally, which was not waterproof, and because Tim Cook showered with his, I figured I could shower with mine, and did take it in the pool some. And eventually the microphone stopped working. Everything else worked fine, but not the microphone, so I ended up eventually passing it down to my family, but I got the Series 3, which I was pleased to note was more water resistant. And I went to Cancun for spring break last week, and there I was in the pool quite a bit. I was in the ocean some, applying sunscreen, so there could be a problem there. But anyway, when I got back, the microphone wasn't working, and I figured I would check with Apple. Unfortunately, it was 18 months old and so outside of the one-year warranty, and with chat support from Apple, I got nowhere. They wanted me to send it in, and the repair would be $300, give or take, which, of course, is just not really feasible for just a microphone not working. So I wanted to throw that out there, both as a cautionary tale to people about water resistance, as well as sort of a frustration with Apple. I own just about everything Apple and would have expected a sort of a higher level of care for customers, and I'm not sure what their policy is and if they sometimes will replace watches for situations like this. But again, given the waterproofing or water resistance claims, and I certainly didn't exceed that by any means, I was hoping to get some help from Apple on this, and unfortunately I was left unsatisfied in that regard. So just bear in mind for your listeners, it can suffer water damage and the microphone won't work anymore, which is quite unfortunate. So anyway, Adam, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate your show and everything you do. Take care.
Hey, Mitch, thank you for your voicemail. And sorry that Apple didn't give you the service you were looking for this time around. I think there's some recommendations I can give you to maybe help out. I am a little bit curious about maybe what kinds of activities you did in Cancun. I believe you when you say, you know, you didn't do anything that would have necessarily caused the issue. But just in case, I want to mention a couple of things about the waterproofing in the Apple Watch Series 3 and 4, mainly for other listeners so that they understand sort of what the limitations are and what the ratings are for the current series of Apple Watch. So Apple says the water resistance rating is good for a depth of up to 50 meters, which is pretty significant. They say it can be used for shallow water activities like swimming in a pool or swimming in the ocean. So those activities, if that's all you were doing, should have been totally fine. Where they say you can run into problems with the water resistance is if you do scuba diving, especially below 50 meters. Also, if you do any kind of water sports where there could be high velocity water, in other words, things like water skiing, surfing, anywhere where, you know, you might have your hand, I guess, probably thrown into the water, or there's forceful water, I guess, being pushed into the device, right? So if you're doing jet skiing, for example, fall off a jet ski, that could potentially push water, I think, into the device and potentially damage it. Obviously, taking it below 50 meters where there's higher water pressure, that could also cause water to get into the device and damage it. I'm also curious to know if water ingress, you know, water getting into the device, is exactly the problem that caused your microphone to go out. I think the assumption is that that's likely what happened because of just timing, but it could be totally unrelated. It could just be a total coincidence that the microphone stopped working. There could be some other reason why that happened. One that I can immediately think of, and actually this may also be related to the water damage or potential water damage, is Apple Watch Series 3 and 4 and 2, or Series 2 and 3 at the very least, I know, because I had a Series 2 watch that had this problem. They have had battery swelling issues where the battery swells up and starts to push on the display and can even eventually pop it out. But if that has started to happen on your device, it could potentially have broken the seal on the display, especially around the display, that could be compromised, and maybe water got in that way and caused some damage, especially if you're spending a lot of time in the water. So I do know that for battery swelling issues, Apple will generally replace the device even out of warranty because there's a safety security concern there. And so you may, you know, just want to go in and have it looked at. And this kind of leads into the other thing that I would tell you is, you know, using phone support and chat support can often be a good experience, but I will tell you personally, I've often had better results actually going into an Apple store, making a Genius Bar appointment. You know, just something about being able to talk to a person face to face. They can see your kind of sincerity and, you know, that you're not just pulling their leg trying to get like a free replacement for an older Apple Watch or something like that. I think really helps, and not always taking no for an answer. You know, sometimes a first tier person really is limited in their ability to what they can do for a customer. So going into an Apple store, I think if you can often yield a better result than just phone support. And when you go in there, just make sure that you're polite, that you explain clearly what the issue is and why you feel the resolution. If they do offer you a resolution or a solution that you don't find acceptable, like, hey, we're going to have to send this in, it's going to cost you $300, then explain very clearly why that solution is not satisfactory enough in your opinion. And more importantly, also state clearly what you feel the resolution should be. So if you think, hey, you should actually repair or replace this Apple Watch for free, say that. Tell them that that's the resolution that you're actually looking for. In this case, you know, if you use the device within the specification of the water resistance rating on the device, then you can explain that you should have a reasonable expectation that you should be able to take the watch in the water, in the ocean, and the microphone wouldn't break. And that because of that, that you feel like there was a defect, physical defect in the device, and that they should replace it for you. Will they do it for you? No. Be prepared that the ultimate answer might be no. Hey, you're out of warranty. Apple does have rules set in place, and sometimes that's always the answer. But it's always worth a second shot. And we've even had listeners go to different Apple retail stores, or make a different appointment on a different day. And just depending upon the day, the person that you talk to, you might get a different result. And you would hope that it would be more consistent than that. But again, this is retail at the end of the day. I think Apple does a better job than most with their support, but not everybody's perfect. So again, it's always worth a second shot. And if you do have to do phone support or chat support, and you don't get the kind of resolution that you like, it's always worth asking if you can be passed up to a higher tier. You know, if you can talk to a manager or someone higher up. Again, just explain clearly, hey, it's not a problem with what you're doing. I just personally don't feel like this is the resolution that I should get. I think this is the resolution I should get. And if you can't help me with that, I'd like to talk to somebody at a higher level who maybe can. You know, we want to be polite to these people. They're just doing their job, and it can be difficult dealing with customers all day. You know, I know that I've not always been the best customer, and just try to recognize that, you know. And I think, again, being polite, being courteous, but being firm, I think there's nothing wrong with that, you know, and clearly stating. I think the really important thing is clearly stating what resolution you're expecting so they know what you're looking for. And they're not just flying blind. And I think very often if they can give you the resolution that you want, they usually do it. I think they will step up and do that. Oftentimes they can't. You know, their hands are tied for whatever reasons and they just can't do it. Again, be willing to accept that as the answer and move on. But I hope that helps you out. Maybe there's some other people in the community who have some additional suggestions. If you do, for Mitch, shoot me an email or an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Thanks for hanging out with me. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, and PDF Pen for iOS, along with PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great software and applications by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com, and all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a question, a comment, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me online between shows, you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.